the issue before, Judge, Your Honors, that I'd like to just bring before you, it's really a two-prong argument. One issue deals with the fact that the instruction was not given on the voluntary use of drugs during the trial. The second one I'll address is also whether or not it becomes a moot point and harmless error. The first is the evidence showed that during the trial that there was smoking of cocaine. It was testified to by one of the main witnesses, Morrell, and that was an issue even with the separation of the parties. There was an issue when the murder allegedly did occur, and the appellant in this case was separated from Morrell and allegedly either went to get a room or get money for a room, and also, I believe, for drugs. And she admitted that had been smoking drugs during the time. When the instruction was offered for it, it was refused. And what makes it significant is the jury came out and specifically asked about it and whether or not that was a factor they should take into account. Clearly, it was an issue that was before them at the time, and it was in their minds whether or not it led to not being convicted of first-degree murder, but it clearly was on their mind, and they were addressing it because they addressed it with the judge.
Well, Mr. Padgett, and this is Judge Huff, there wasn't any evidence, expert testimony to suggest what, if any, effect the drugs had on the defendant's ability to formulate ideas, was there? And without such evidence, wouldn't you not be able to have the instruction given anyway?
You would have the instruction given, Your Honor, I think because there was evidence testimony that he was smoking drugs, and even the prosecutor alluded that he was high on the drugs during his closing argument.
Mr. Padgett, but being high is not necessarily the same as not having the ability to form intent, is it? I mean, our
it
cases make clear. What is the evidence of record that he could not form intent based on whatever drug use there was?
If that had been an instruction, it could have been. There's an inference, I guess, you can draw from things that facts that are presented in the trial. And the inference would have been that because he's smoking crack, it does affect you, and that would be an influence he was under at the time.
But having never experienced it myself, would it be a common understanding of the average juror that smoking crack would prevent you from being able to form intent?
John, I think that would be a question of fact for the jury whether or not he did. I think
unless a juror has used crack, how does a juror know that would have, that one of the effects would be the inability to form intent?
They would not. That'd be a factual issue that's either missing, present, or missing at trial. The fact he was smoking the drugs. I'm sorry.
If it's missing, what is the scintilla of evidence to support the instruction that he might have been of diminished capacity?
We'd argue the fact that he was smoking an illegal drug, and it's a Schedule II, it was cocaine or crack cocaine. He's smoking at the time once or twice during the course of the evening. I think that in of itself, and one of the reasons why they're going to hotel room and other things are going on and why they need cash was one of the reasons I think is enough evidence in itself to justify the instruction. The fact it's something he's, even the prosecutor alluded to it, and it's evident, I think, because the jury even picked up on it, and they asked about it. And so it's enough for them, it becomes a factual issue for the jury to determine whether or not he could form that intent. Now, the fact that whether they decide he could, but that's an issue that was missing, and the law was missing for them to consider on that. Because they didn't know what to do with it. They had the evidence. Clearly, the jury was aware of it. Clearly, the jury was considering it. because they came back and asked a question about it. Is that an issue we can regard in the issue when looking at the facts of this case? That jury instruction wasn't there. That's the law, but it wasn't there. They didn't have any understanding of it.
Now, and this is Judge O'Brien, and he was convicted of second-degree murder. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
And your contention that the jury should have been instructed about voluntary intoxication, that's as a defense to first-degree murder. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So what effect, if any, does it have that the jury found him guilty of second degree?
That was the second point I was going to argue, Your Honor, because you really put your finger on is the issue moot because he was found guilty of second degree murder?
Mm-hmm.
And we would argue that, as doing a lot of the trials myself, when the issue is not before the jury on the issue of drugs, and they're looking at the capable of deliberation or premeditation, a lot of the times, lack of that instruction takes away the presentation of multiple lines of defenses that you can argue to a jury. The fact that he is intoxicated, and it goes in many ways, inferences about either malice, express malice, and pride malice, even the motive for the killing. And so by not having that instruction, it takes away that type of defenses that a counsel can argue. Because clearly it was something on their mind. Clearly it was something. In many cases, you don't know what the jury's thinking. They come back and they read a verdict.
Mr. Padgett, if the instruction had been given and the jury had followed the instruction, as we must assume that they follow instructions, the verdict would have been the same, wouldn't it?
It would have, Your Honor. It would have been. If that was a consideration. But if you think about it, there are many other considerations they may have decided on and may have told, because there was no instruction on intoxication, drug intoxication, it may not have been an issue that they even tried to consider because they don't know what the law is. And so it might have been another issue. Be that as it may, they did come back with second-degree murder. But it doesn't show the lack that instruction would have made a difference in relation to what they're considering. It would have made a difference if they understood the law. And it also, be that as it may, because they may have decided on other grounds, that does raise the issue of you just written been harmless error, because he was not convicted of first-degree murder. But besides that, I guess what I'm looking at as well is the presentation of multiple lines of defenses that is open to a defense counsel when you're looking at the issue of drug intoxication. Because now that's something he can heavily argue to the jury. He doesn't have a law on it. He doesn't have an instruction on it. And it all falls out of that. And many times you're looking at the drug intoxication for other issues as well concerning the murder. Because if he's high on drugs, if he's unable either form intent or premeditation, how did he pick this house? How did he how to get into the house? What was his motivation? I think all those things start to come into play. And so when the instruction in voluntary intoxication of drugs is not an issue, which it was, clearly, because the prosecutor put it in issue in his closing argument, they don't know what the law is. Well, you're arguing something, and it really just becomes a punitive measure. It doesn't become a sword for the defendant. It becomes, a shield. It becomes a sword. And the prosecution can use it to show he was high on drugs when he's committing these crimes and show that he's a bad person, he's using drugs, he's doing this, but it's not the shield that it's intended to be. And to show that this is also an issue of mitigation you need to take into account, because many times they may convict on a charge such as second-degree murder at the same time because of the circumstances involving maybe drug intoxication. It affects the sentence. And because of that, in this case, he got second-degree murder. He got 40 years. He got the max. If there would have been, during the trial or an instruction, a voluntary intoxication of drugs, that may have affected and mitigated as well because they understood what the law was, what the sentence would have been. Because during the sentencing hearing, they read what their limits are of the law, what they can allow to sentence. that's it. But the issue of drug intoxication was never presented to them in a way that either they understand the law or it's mitigation for the defendant. So it became a sword to cut him with because the prosecutor mentioned that he's high on drugs, he's committing these crimes, but it was not the shield. It was also used for his benefit as well to show a diminished capacity in some argument. So the defense counsel was kind of hampered in how he presents the case. I did not try the case, but I think without that drug instruction, they don't know what the law is, and there was law on it. They questioned themselves, and I think the fact the jury questioned it means it was an issue in their minds. It was enough that they concerned about it. And second of all, it limited the mitigation quality of that voluntary intoxication. So because of that, we'd argue that's error for the court to look at. So I've done a lot of talking, and I think that's really the 2 points I was trying to put out. I don't mean to beat a dead horse about it, but
well, Ms. Burns, you have 3 minutes left if you want, and we can use those as rebuttal if you wish.
I'll just use a rebuttal, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Fine. Mr. Shanville, we'll hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Chris Shanville for the Commonwealth of Virginia in this appeal. As has been stated already, voluntary intoxication can be a defense to first-degree murder, but it cannot be a defense to second-degree murder or any other crime. The proffered jury instruction at page 1027 of the appendix actually states that voluntary intoxication is not a defense to second-degree murder. In this case, as has been mentioned, the jury acquitted Mr. Marshall of first-degree murder and convicted him of second-degree murder. Therefore, any error in refusing to give the instruction that he asked for had to be harmless, because he received the full benefit he possibly could have received had he gotten the instruction, even though he was not given the instruction. Moreover, if this court were to somehow rule in his favor and remand for a new trial, he would not be entitled, he could not possibly get a voluntary intoxication instruction at a new trial, because for double jeopardy reasons, he can only be tried again for second-degree murder. And because it's not a defense of second-degree murder, that instruction would not be proper at that retrial. So Commonwealth's position is that while the case is not moot, any error is and necessarily is harmless given the jury's outcome in this case, and that Mr. Marshall has gotten all the benefit he possibly could have received from the instruction, and he cannot receive any benefit from a retrial at this point. So this court should hold that any error was harmless. My opposing counsel has argued today that the failure to give the instruction somehow limited the arguments that defense counsel could have made. The only limitations on proper arguments went to an argument that voluntary intoxication can be a defense to first-degree murder. Clearly, he was acquitted of first-degree murder, convicted of second. In terms of arguments in defense of a charge of second-degree murder, there are no legally sound, legally proper arguments the defense counsel could have made based on his voluntary intoxication because, again, as the proffered instruction correctly stated, voluntary intoxication is not a defense to second-degree murder. So to the extent that counsel for Mr. Marshall is arguing today that trial counsel should have been allowed to ask the jury to acquit him of all charges based on the voluntary intoxication, that any such argument would have been legally incorrect and would not have been permitted, and therefore he's not in any way been harmed by the failure to give this jury instruction given the outcome in this case.
Mr. Shanville?
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Chief.
I was just curious. You've addressed the effect on the argument, but what about the argument that Mr. Padgett has raised about the effect on sentencing?
Again, voluntary intoxication is not a defense to a crime. It's highly unlikely that it is something that that would have mitigated, that should be considered to be so mitigating of the seriousness of the offense that it should have an effect on the jury's sentencing consideration. The reason it's not a defense to a crime other than first-degree murder is that we recognize that people, and the law has recognized for centuries, that the effect. Someone who gets voluntarily intoxicated is responsible for their actions and doing those drugs or taking in alcohol. And as a result of that, the law holds them accountable for almost everything that they're capable of doing in that state. The only thing that they're not, arguably might not be capable of doing in that state is deliberating and premeditating, and that is why it can be a defense of first-degree murder. But the law still holds people who are voluntarily intoxicated responsible for every other criminal conduct, and thus Mr. Marshall would have and should have been fully held responsible at sentencing as well based on his voluntary intoxication. Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Chandeville, the instruction that was offered made no mention of any impact on sentencing whatsoever. It's just it was the standard, if intoxicated, it could be a defense to first-degree murder, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And so even if we were to assume for a moment that a proper argument could be made that the sentence should be lessened because the person was using illegal intoxicants, that the failure to give this instruction didn't affect the ability to make that argument at the sentencing phase. That would have been a different instruction or a different issue altogether, correct?
That is exactly correct, Your Honor. And I doubt that a proper instruction on that issue could have been given, but
I asked you to assume that it could.
Assuming that it could, he never asked for it. And the instruction that he did ask for at the guilt phase, as Your Honor has mentioned, states nothing about the effect, if any, that voluntary intoxication could have at sentencing. Moreover, Marshall's counsel seems to argue that because of the lack of the instruction, defense counsel was unable to make any arguments relating to Mr. Marshall's intoxication. Of course, that's not true. The testimony was allowed into evidence. No one argued that Ms. Merrill's testimony was inadmissible regarding Mr. Marshall's drug use. That evidence was there, and defense counsel could have used that evidence in his closing arguments and certainly could have used that evidence to support an argument that the jury should be more lenient at sentencing. So the failure to give this instruction certainly cannot be said to have any effect whatsoever on the jury's verdict, and also could not be said to have had any effect on the jury's subsequent recommendation for sentence. So for those reasons, we would hold that any error necessarily was harmless. For the reasons stated in my brief, there was no error in this case. The Jenkins case, the Way case, the Hatcher case, all published decisions from the Supreme Court of Virginia support that argument. In each of those cases, there was evidence of some intoxication in the record. In the Jenkins case, I believe there's actually evidence of a substantial amount of intoxication, a substantial amount of consumption of alcohol in that case. But in each of those cases, the Supreme Court of Virginia held that there was just no additional evidence of what, if any, effect that intoxication had on the defendant, and what, if any, effect it had in his ability to willfully and with premeditation, deliberation, commit murder. So for that reason, each of those cases, the court held that the lower court was not required to give the proper jury instruction, and for that reason, those cases were affirmed on their merits. So we do believe that the narrowest and best grounds for resolving this case is based on the harmless error argument, but we also contend that this court's case law and the Supreme Court of Virginia's case law firmly established that there was no error in this case. And so for all those reasons, we would ask the court to affirm, and I'm happy to answer any further questions the court might have. Otherwise, I'm happy to rest on my brief.
Hearing no further questions, Mr. Padgett, if you have anything to add in your remaining 3 minutes.
Just briefly, Your Honor, I understand it. Arguments of counsel from the Commonwealth, and but this is it. The jury only knows the law they've been given, and though the instruction is limited to the issue of second-degree murder, and when the jury goes back to deliberate, in their minds, voluntary intoxication of a drug or alcohol, that to them, under the law, it's not even recognized because they were never even given anything to consider. And I know from trying cases that though you have an issue before, and they know what the law is, this is a factor to be taken into consideration, first-degree murder. So no, by necessity, you know, it's a factor to be taken into consideration. And when the prosecutor stands up and uses it as a sword, to say he was high on drugs when he's committing these offenses and attacks him with it. But under the law, he's not, they're told under the law, that's also a shield to protect him from certain things. It robs the court or the jury of that understanding when they're going back to deliberate. Counsel can argue a lot, but by not having that issue of law before them, that yes, that is an issue you should consider, even on this charge of murder. It's an issue to consider. And when they're considering those things, they may come back with a conviction. But these juries always apply those things into what they're going to give him on sentencing. And so if there's any mitigation or consideration to be given for the act itself, which here was pretty bad, that he was deprived of that because that issue of law was not addressed in, and they didn't take it back with him in the jury room. So now the mitigation that could have come from that was taken away. So we'd ask the court to take that in consideration as well. And that's all I have, Your Honor.
Very well. Thank you very much. The case is submitted, and you all will be hearing from us shortly. That concludes the docket for today, and the court will now go into conference.